gentleman here has said that they're going to talk about in the interim, so be it, but I'd oppose Representative Phillips' motion to change this to 15 days.
Mr. Chair, I have one further question if I might ask.
Representative Dix.
Did you offer these amendments in the Senate to amend?
Initially, it was our understanding, we were assured that the bill basically dealt with with personal guardianship. And as I said before, I had no problem with that. It wasn't until later that it was discovered that the hearing process for conservatorships was wound up in the same deal. And that's when we actually came prepared to testify, and then it was felt that if everybody would agree on a 15-day notice period, then we wouldn't tie up the program. I have a couple other concerns relating to whether a person can voluntarily go under conservatorship, I'm not dealing with those now.
I can appreciate your concerns. I guess I didn't get an answer to my, or I don't think that through what you said I got a yes or no.
To my knowledge, the banks did not testify on the Senate side because they thought that only guardianship changes would be wrought by the bill as opposed to conservatorship changing as well.
Okay. At what point did the banks realize that it affected both?
With me on this one.
At the time it came to the House side. At least that's when I was informed we had a problem with it.
Okay. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
I would want to launch it. Personally, on the guardianship, I would support the increase to 30 days, but I really didn't concentrate on the conservatorship, and really didn't discuss that part, and I would be reluctant to change the notice for the conservatorship. With that, I don't know if it's very feasible to take the two separately in this issue. If not, I will change my mind and vote for the 15 days as amended for both.
Well, I guess I'll leave it to Representative Phillips if he chooses to deal with guardianship and conservatorship in a different fashion. It's Representative Phillips' motion at this time to amend both, I believe, to the 15 days.
Well,
Representative Phillips?
I guess I view this as eloquently as Representative Hanlon made it in the point that perhaps that these issues weren't brought up in the Senate. We are the public policy makers. I think 30 days is a bad public policy. I think it's a basic consumer protection issue, and I'd like to move to 15 days.
That's not a Representative Bellamy. Representative Miller, did you...
Yes, I have a question or two, perhaps Representative Hanlon, deal in this area.
Representative Hanlon, do you
want to... What? Maybe please. From your own experience, a question on the nature of the response with the attorney when one is located in the whatever time frame is allowed. How detailed a response is required? Is it merely just we're going to appear, we're going to answer, or do you need to file detailed objections?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't deal in this every day in my law practice. If you want to talk, ask Ms. Robinson that. I'm sure she could respond.
And the other question you might be thinking.
Well, why don't we take one at a time?
Sure.
How detailed is the objection?
Representative Miller, it's my experience that either can be done. I think it's preferable, however, to file a detailed response. You at least need to get some information. As you're aware in the practice of law, one can file a general denial and be done with it. You can do that sort of thing, or you can respond as specifically as possible.
So the whatever period we decided on, if the lawyer was notified the day before the response was due, really not necessarily out of luck for filing detailed objections or making your objections known at some point. You can't make them early, perhaps, as well as you might want to, but the option is still available.
As in any situation where an attorney has a deadline to meet, you manage to meet it.
Okay, one other question about the... if I might, Mr. Chair, thank you. the language which says the date shall be not less than whatever we decide it's going to be, can it be more than?
Yes, it could be.
And who would allow that flexibility, I guess?
Well, it's usually attorney preference and discretion. I mean, personally, when I file something like this, I just, as a matter of common courtesy, give attorneys 2 to 3 weeks to respond, because as a courtesy, I personally would not want to have 10 days or less to respond. But I think it's up to the attorney who's filing the notice. And or to the court, if the court wants to set a date.
Do you find most attorneys to be courteous in this area?
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the previous question.
Okay, the previous question's been called for. Any objections? If not, we'll take the vote on Representative Phillips' motion to reduce 30 days to 15 days on page 2, line 25. On Representative Phillips' motion, clerk will call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Bun?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye. No.
Excuse me.
No.
Dix votes no.
Sorry.
Heaven?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Ringer?
No.
Mr. Chair.
Motion's adopted. Representative Phillips.
I move the amended version of A. and Gross Senate Bill 783 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Phillips moves Senate Bill 83, A. Engrossed, as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion on the motion on the bill? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll.
Gelman?
Aye.
Gelman?
Aye.
Gunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Aye.
Hammond?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Hanlon will carry the bill. Okay, 2643.
You want to go ahead and give it? I'll follow up. Council.
Okay. House Bill 2643 makes some changes in the Residential Landlord and Tenant Act. Basically, it clarifies several provisions relating to the calculation of time periods for various purposes. It provides that calendar days are to be used. It also specifies when certain time periods are going to begin to run. The measure provides that a utility company cannot transfer a claim against a tenant to the owner of real property without the written consent of the owner. It also makes some provisions regarding resident managers. The measure, the last, I don't know, about 10 or 11 sections, establishes a new specialty license, which is called the Real Estate Property Manager, which authorizes the holder to engage in the rental and management of another person's property. And the measure also requires landlords in certain cities, over 250,000 population, to provide garbage pickup for their tenants.
Okay.
It's a big problem.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
I've had a couple of questions for the real estate commissioner at my last hearing, and I see that she's here. And regarding the new licensee, they were unable to be at the regular hearing, so we went ahead and sent it to full committee.
Sure, that'd be fine. Representative Bellamy, if you'd like to call those folks forward. Welcome. Please be sure to identify yourselves for purpose of the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Morella Larson, Real Estate Commissioner, and with me today is Steve Hawes, Deputy Commissioner in the Real Estate Department.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Bellamy.
And I would start out by saying, as Morella knows very well, I do have a real estate license, and I would like to be considered an active real estate person, although at times it's questionable. The question I have is, you're creating a new licensee, and it requires that if you're managing property, rental property in your office, that an individual in your office will have to have the license designee. Does that mean in all of the real estate offices that handle a large or quite a few rentals, that somebody in that office is going to have to be relicensed?
Steve, go ahead and answer that.
Mr. Chairperson, Representative Bellamy.
Please identify yourself again for
Steve right Hawes, Real Estate Division. Let me answer that two ways. First, it does not change the existing law. A real estate broker or someone qualified as a real estate broker could still manage property under their real estate broker's license. The second thing it doesn't change in the law is that a real estate broker would still be capable of hiring an unlicensed individual to engage in all property management acts except the signing of the owner's agreement, the owner's property management agreement. So all these provisions do is allow, for want of a better description, a bookkeeper to set up shop as a property manager and engage only in property management, and that they would have to do so, they would have to have a property manager's license. That's the only change in this whole business.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
I understand the intent of it. The question comes, the real estate office to which I belong manages the majority of the rental properties and matters. Technically, the broker is the manager. But the secretary, who answers the phone, generally collects the rent, disperses the money, and so forth. She does not handle the rental agreement. And I guess the real question is somebody else, is that secretary going to have to be licensed in our office? And second of all, the broker can go ahead and do these activities without an additional license.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bellamy, these amendments do not change the present operation, the present law, the way you're operating right now. It will remain the same, doing the very same thing you do. What this provides is for the individual who wants to be a property manager only. They don't want to sell, they don't want to appraise, they don't want to do anything. Only be a property manager, and we have some people in the state that's all they want to do. This provision provides that licensing category. This establishes a licensing category, and those people would be required to comply with approximately the same status as you have as a broker. That's what we propose in this amendment. So it would not change any existing operation.
Okay, one final question, Mr. Chair, and I'm looking at the proposed amendments on page 20. Do you? Yes. And it's sub 6. It says a real estate organization may be licensed as a real estate property manager if it designates an individual. Would I read that to say then that most real estate offices would not ask to be licensed as a real estate property manager?
Mr. Chairperson, Representative Bellamy, this provision is in here only for one reason. That's to allow this individual who's just doing property management to construct his business by way of corporation, exactly like a broker might in real estate. It just says that you can have a property management organization, but you can only have that organization with a licensed property manager heading it. An entity can't personally supervise employees. A property manager individual can. It's just like we have for real estate organizations.
So, Mr. Chair, it is not the intent of the real estate division to encourage or to somehow, I think the word's encourage, offices to become real estate property managers. Because as I read it, if there's going to be some indication that you could have this new title if you're managing rental properties, then you've got all the provisions that it says it shall designate and so forth and so forth.
Mr. Chairperson, Representative Bellamy, you're correct. This is an accommodation to those in the industry that want, in effect, a specialty license. Might indicate that if you look on the bottom of page 22, section 18, there are a number of sections that will not apply to this new license. As a matter of fact, one of them, 696359 on line 28, is a provision that currently allows a broker or an appraiser to have someone temporarily come in and supervise his office in his absence, illness, vacation, death in the family, whatever. Because this one does not apply, they couldn't do that. The property manager would have to be either there in supervisory charge, or the door would be closed.
Representative Bunn.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Stan.
Steve, in the current law, if somebody wants to go out and set up a property management firm outside of being a real estate broker, can they do that?
Mr. Chairperson, Representative Bunn, only for their own property. They couldn't do it for compensation for another. And the definition of compensation in the real estate law is very old and very broad. So if they do it for the promise of chickens 5 years down the road, it's compensation.
So this expands the opportunity for people to be involved?
Yes, it just allows a specialty license.
Thanks. Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
I am comfortable, and Mr. Chair, I would just like to state for the record that it is not the intent of this particular new license, that this new license somehow down the road become a requirement for the normal real estate office who is handling rental property under the present conditions.
Mr. Chair, I might just comment on that. The broker now, for instance, can appraise property, but we additionally have what is called an appraiser's license for those who want to only appraise. This is synonymous to that. The broker can do full service, but if you only want to do property management, this would be the license you would acquire. So it's just another licensing opportunity, you might say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the committee's indulgence.
Okay, do we have a motion on the bill?
I would so move, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Bellamy moves House Bill 2643 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Representative Bellamy, could you holler back in our office and see if we've got anybody there who needs to come in and vote? Or if there's anybody out in the court that they're continuing way of passing. Thank you. I hope we can retrieve Representative Burton and Bauman now. Here we are. Okay, this is on the motion on House Bill 2643, as amended to the floor, to pass.
Clerk will call the roll.
Cut out the garbage.
Bauman?
Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Burton?
Mr. Chair, before I vote, I only have to say that every time we get a real estate bill down in the Housing Committee, we had one at condominiums. They seem to always grow from little simple bills into these monsters, but I vote yes.
Votes aye.
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 Hanlon?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Dix will carry the bill at his request. Thank you all who worked on this for some time. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, I really am sorry, but the questions came up in the real estate division at our subcommittee. Really did not know to be here, and nobody else could answer them.
That's more than glad to take the time to do it
this
right.
This stage in the game, it's not real easy to make the phone calls.
I understand. Okay, Senate Bill 301.
Senate Bill 301 would replace Oregon statute on the determination of death with the Uniform Determination of Death Act.
Okay.
It's a rule.
And can you tell us the date and the Senate action on this?
Yes, it was April 30th. There were 16 ayes, 9 no votes, 5 people away on legislative business.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanlon.
I don't mean to speak on behalf of the bill. My vote doesn't reflect that. But I do want the committee to know that it was it's just a controversial subject area, and I appreciate the fact that our committee had information that many states have adopted the proposal here. 23, my notes say, and that we're all groping at trying to get some uniformity of legal definition of what death is for legal purposes, and yet the bill also allows for, in sub 2, line 8, the determination to be made with accepted medical standards, referring to the two lines directly above it, accepted medical standards, and maybe Representative Bauman will want to speak a little bit further to this, is a dynamic thing that changes as the medical technology of society advances. And it's just a heavy-duty bill, Mr. Chairman, and you know, maybe it's good policy, maybe it's not.
I don't know if I can really comment on it.
Representative Bauman.
It's not the... It is real important policy that we're setting, and it's not the most cheerful little bill that we've had all year either. I think the important thing is that accepted medical standards are what will apply to line 6 and 7, what constitutes sub A, what constitutes sub B, and if anybody needs it to be underlined, I mean, the issue with the bill is that Uniform Determination of Death Act, is kind of a, I wish I could think, I mean, you got to be really, there are included, short of this definition, a lot of very minimal standards of life that may fall within a category that people where people would rather not define that where people would rather define that as being dead. So, I mean, that's the issue, I think.
Okay. We have a motion on the bill.
I'll move the bill. Move Senate Bill 1 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Bauman moves Senate Bill 301A engrossed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll. Oh, excuse me, Representative Burton.
I do have a question. I actually have two questions. They're concerning sub 2 of section 2 and sub 3. Sub 2 would appear to me to be a statement that determination of death is according to accepted medical standards. Are we now saying that sub A and B of section 2 are the standards for determining death?
No. Oh, wait. Mr. Chair, may I
stab at it?
Sorry,
Mr. Chair, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Representative Bauman, you may proceed if you wish.
Well, it hasn't been the easiest for us to openly discuss, Mr. Chair.
Maybe I should go to my question on sub 3 first.
It's moving right along, yes.
Sub 3 relates to making the law uniform among states enacting it. Is that saying that we're getting in compliance with some federal statute, or what is the intent of sub 3 of section 2?
May I, Mr. Chair, or maybe my...
Representative Hamlin, would you like to try to respond?
Well, I just think it's a general purpose statement, Representative Burton, in order to, it seems, promote the policy that those states that adopt it should... make it make less difference as to whether or not there's interstate transportation of persons for the purposes of getting around the law.
What? All right. Could I ask again, once again,
Representative Burton,
why sub 2 would appear to me to be contradictory, or sub A and B of that, section 2, are the standard.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
This issue came up in subcommittee, and the interpretation given both by the representative from the Oregon State Bar and my interpretation would, I mean, the intent should be clear here, and I think the bill is clearly drafted, that the accepted medical standards will be the standards that apply to a determination of whether there has been either irreversible cessation of circulatory and respiratory functions, or, again, using accepted medical standards, whether there has been irreversible cessation of all functions of the entire brain, including the brainstem. So we do not have to, rather than having two specifics in one kind of laundry basket, what we have are two specifics which will be defined by accepted standards.
I guess my problem or my concern is with the word standards, because the practices would be one thing, standards or something else. Standards are what, to me, the word implies setting up standards to determine that would already be, if it's practices, would be to something by which you determine standards. The standards are the two established. The standards are irreversible cessation. And maybe I'm just arguing. I'll leave it there. It's just the wording seems awkward.
Representative Bellamy.
Representative Burton, I don't know what to say because we didn't discuss that, but I want the committee to understand that the passage of this bill is it does make it uniform, but it will most likely make it more difficult to declare somebody dead. Because particularly when you look on line 7, the language of the entire brain, including the brainstem, now is a tougher standard. When this bill comes, this seems like a very small bill, but I want you to know that when it goes to the floor, the potential is there for people to start talking about a lot of issues. And as long as the committee understands that that's in reality what we're doing, when it gets to the floor, and if there is adverse testimony, we start getting letters or calls, which is entirely possible. This is major public policy in this bill, even though we didn't have the hearing room full of people.
Okay. Representative Hanlon.
Representative Bellamy is correct that the standards, as in lines 6 and 7, would make it more difficult to declare someone dead than existing law under those standards, because it includes the brainstem under being brain dead, but the existing law repealed in line 4 referred to says the physician may make such a determination, meaning death, if irreversible cessation of spontaneous respiration and circulatory function or irreversible cessation of spontaneous brain function exists. So the law that we're repealing says that physician may use those standards, whereas this bill says a person is dead if. I think there is a bit of a difference policy-wise. We're trying to be much more explicit in this bill in saying what constitutes death in more of a mandatory manner than the existing law.
Okay. Representative Burton.
Well, just one more comment for the record, because I think Representative Bellamy is correct. This is the kind of bill, while it seems simple, and I understand the purpose of it, is the sort that evokes a lot of emotions. The Senate bill originally that came over to us, which makes that from a may to a shall, and Representative Hanlon used the term standards in lines 6 and 7. And the Senate, for some reason, added into the original bill the determination of death must be made in accordance with accepted medical standards, which it seems we just set those up in A and B, and it's it's an odd, it just seems like an odd piece of business. I understand the intent of the bill, I understand that it makes it more difficult to determine death, ultimately. And I suppose this is when we sort of unplug somebody. So I understand the idea of saying accepted medical standards. I think we just made those standards, which is fine. But I just want everybody to understand this, that we just did.
But Representative Hanlon.
Representative Burton, maybe we're doing this too much, but the accepted medical standards are dynamic, and so what constitutes the irreversible cessation of circulation in 1987 to the medical community in 1997 might not be the same thing. Counsel, did you have a comment?
We've asked Ms. Godwin on behalf of the bar to join us at the witness table. This is the bar bill. Can you perhaps respond or comment on some of the questions or issues that have been raised?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Diana Godwin, representing the Oregon State Bar. I fully understand Representative Burton's concern, and if it might move the committee along, we might suggest some additional language there on line 8 to reflect the intent on the record that Representative Bauman addressed. It would be to the effect, and this is a bit inartful because I'm sitting here, you know, drafting on the back of an envelope, that a determination of whether the conditions of subsection A or subsection B of subsection 1 of this section exist shall be made.